Hello and welcome to the Fun Kids Bookworms podcast. My name is Bex and I love books. And this week I've got two brilliant, brand new podcast guests. People I've never spoken to before. And they have got some rather wicked books on the way for you. We're going to be talking to Nansibuga Nadadia Isdahl very soon about her new book, Girl on the Fly. Then we have got the rather brilliant Megan Hopkins telling me all about Starminster. So stick around for that. So first, we're going to go to Nansibuga Nadadia Isdahl. Now, her new book, Girl on the Fly, is all about Cam in Philadelphia in 1992. She's trying to win her team's track race, she's trying to navigate the fact that one of her friends isn't speaking to her anymore, and she's trying to figure out just what she does with her Aunt Rose sharing her room at home. Here's Nansibuga to tell us more. I'm joined right now down the line by Nansibuga Nadadia Isdahl. Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, how are you?
I'm so good, thank you. Can you tell our listeners where we find you today?
I am currently in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, East Africa.
This is incredible. And I'm not going to lie, I feel very honoured that you've still made the time to chat to me at Fun Kids.
Oh no, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem. Now, I have just finished Girl on the Fly, your brand new book, and I loved it. It is an absolute joyous read. And can you tell us, to kickstart, a little bit about Cam and where we meet her?
So Girl on the Fly is a story that's set in Philadelphia in 1992. And it is about Kamaria Kessie, a 13-year-old Tanzanian-American girl who is passionate about running track. She's very passionate about her friends and her family, but the one thing she's not passionate about is change. And in the book, we find her at the end of the school year in a whirlwind of change. So to start, it's the end of the track season, and it's the last chance for her relay team to win the state championship before one of her teammates, Luce, moves away. She and her best friend, Odie, aren't speaking, and she doesn't know why. And then she learns at the very last minute that an aunt she's never met before is arriving from Tanzania, and she'll be forced to share her bedroom. And so basically the book follows Cam scrambling to keep steady amidst all of this change.
Now, I love this book because I love Cam. I really related to that thing of where you just don't want things to change. And Aunt Rose comes like in a bit of a whirlwind, right?
Yes.
She's an incredible character. Is she inspired by anybody in your family?
I guess in some measure by an aunt Joyce my aunt Joyce. My first trip to Uganda, I remember, so I'd spoken to her on the phone, but we'd never met in person. And when I first met her at the airport, we had never met before. And she was like screaming at me to run to her. She like enveloped me in these hugs. We had never met before. And people, you know, I was with other people and they're like, have you met before? And I'm like, no, we have never met before. She was so joyous just to see me because I was her older sister's daughter. And from that moment on, we've been sort of incredibly close. But she gave me the warmest welcome that I have ever received in my life. And I've never forgotten it. And so she's Aunt Rose is sort of inspired in parts by my Aunt Joyce. Definitely.
Oh, I love that because I love Aunt Rose. She's a very patient woman, I think, as well. She says to Cam, you know, you're slow to warm. But she does get her there in the end. And by the end of the book, they are very, very close friends, right?
They really are.
It's such a wonderful thing. And tell me, when it comes to track and to running, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not the best athlete in the world. So I have no experience of athletics at any point. But were you a track runner back in the day?
I was a track runner. I was very much a track runner. And I still run to this day. I don't run competitively. I mean, every now and again, I'll do a road race. But I ran and I loved running. And I loved both the running part, the physicality of it, and the competitions. But what I really loved was the camaraderie. And so basically the relationship Cam has with her teammates is in some ways inspired by the relationship that I had with my track running mates growing up. So I was very much an athlete, but I really loved the camaraderie and the sort of the fellowship and the partnership that I experienced being part of a team.
Yeah, you can tell in the book that Cam just takes it incredibly seriously. There's a little hiccup in the middle section of the book with her running teammates. And you can tell that she's absolutely devastated because it's not only for her, but she wants to do the best for the whole teammates, right? And that must be how it felt like for you on the team as well.
Absolutely. And I think for her, Cam, I mean, so running can be, you have individual sports, but it's also a team sport when you have the relays. And for Cam, I think running in the relay with her teammates sort of symbolizes like a circle of friendship. So it's not just about them running together. It's something about the race and the four of them moving together symbolizes friendship, symbolizes fellowship for her. And so she does take it very seriously, not just the running part of it, but the connection that she feels with her running mates as they run around the track for that, the 4x1 relay. And I very much had that experience as well. I loved the relay. I loved running my individual races, but I also loved running as part of a team because you do get the energy. Once that baton is slapped into your wrist, you do feel the energy from the previous runner, and you hope to pass on energy to the next runner. So there's something really sort of, at least for me, there was something very precious about running in a relay.
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite a buzzy moment where you just feel like you have to, yeah, just go for it. The power is going through you. And you mentioned there about connections. And arguably, yeah, the book is about connections. Cam and her friends, obviously, Cam and her family and her heritage as well and her background. Was it quite cool to write about, you know, when Aunt Rose came in and told her stories of her family?
I loved that bit. Yeah, and I think I grew up, my family, I was born in the US, my family is from Uganda, and we grew up with a lot of house guests from Uganda, and it was always such an enriching experience for me. So unlike Cam, I didn't have resistance to people coming into our home, staying for extended periods of time, months, sometimes even years. I absolutely loved it, and there was just so much that I gained from that. And so I part of one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book was so that I wanted to show just how much somebody stands to gain from extended family and from that connection with community and other family members, people that you might not be familiar with, but that have something to share about your culture. And so I wanted to sort of include that because it was so like beneficial and remarkable for me, both at the time and as an adult. It's been such a positive thing throughout my life. And I wanted to, you know, to offer that perspective.
Man, I love that. But if I had a family guest come to visit for a year, I'd be like, are we sure about this?
That's Cam.
And also we have to talk about Cam and Odie as well, because Odie is her former best friend and something's happened between them and she doesn't quite know what.
Yes, he is her longest standing friend. And I think she has so much anxiety around the fact that she's not sure what happened. They were incredibly close. And I think we see throughout the book, she has to build up some communication skills to sort of get at the root of what happened.
He's such a lovely, gentle character as well. He's clearly quite a thoughtful character. And I did love seeing their relationship kind of like come and go and blossom. You can tell there's a lot of love there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And he's also like, very, very close. Their mothers are best friends. And so I wanted to not just showcase the relationships that she had with her teammates, but then, you know, her larger world, which obviously includes Odie and her parents and Aunt Rose. But I think it's a really special relationship for her. And I wanted to show also, I think part of the aim was to show that, especially for young people, sometimes you have a falling out with a friend. It's like the most devastating thing in the world. But I also wanted to show that it's entirely possible, especially through good friends, to rebuild that sort of that connection, and that there are bumps in the road in all relationships. And you can just you sit down and you try to have a conversation about it. Hopefully you can work through them. But I also thought that it was important to show that, especially for this age where friendships are just everything for kids that are like 10, 11, 12, 13 through 18, even older, even people are my age. You know, friendships are just everything. And so I thought it was really important to showcase a bump in the road and then how potentially that could be worked through.
Yeah, Cam comes through quite a lot of stuff in this book and she grows a lot. You know, she accepts changes in her family life. She deals with kind of disappointments on the track. She deals with, you know, coping with her friends and Odie. Is there one bit of Cam's journey in particular that you're super proud of, that you just thought she dealt with really well when you were writing this? You were like, I'm really happy with this character and how I'm kind of progressing her.
I think that her acceptance of Aunt Rose made me really happy because she's just somebody who didn't, you know, she's an only child. That's the other thing. So having somebody, and she's also somebody who likes to focus. She likes to concentrate. Having somebody in her space, I think, was a tremendous adjustment for her. So I think Alexis, her friend, was always the one that's saying that, you know, you don't have siblings. We've been through this camp. We know what it's like to share rooms. You haven't had that challenge. And her best friend, Odie, is also an only child. And so they sort of connected on that level. And so I think for her, having somebody not just in the house, but in her bedroom was an anxiety-ridden moment. And for her the growth that she showed by the end of the book in terms of that level of acceptance, and not just acceptance, but she grew to love Aunt Rose so much in such a short period of time, I think is a very great example of how much she changed and evolved by the end of the book.
Yeah, I absolutely love this book. I love reading stories about real people and about like real life situations. So I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this book. Thank you so much for bringing it to us. And is there one bit of the book that you want us to look out for, or one character that you love the most that you want us to pay special attention to? Would it be Aunt Rose? Would it be Odie? Would it be Cam herself?
Yes, it would be Aunt Rose, even though I am in my heart inclined to say Luce. I love Luce. throughout my life, I have a sort of a pattern with friendships, and I've always had a loose. So that person that I'm super silly with, and it's always jokes. Loose means light. She's so lighthearted. And so I love all of Cam's friends. I love Aunt Rose. I love her parents. I love Odie. But I guess if I am to tell the absolute truth, Luce, and I'm not supposed to have favorites, but Luce would be my favorite. And only because I've always had a Luce my entire life. I've always had that kind of a friend.
I love that. That's a great answer. All right. So readers and listeners, check out Luce in the book for sure. Thank you so much for telling us all about Girl on the Fly. It is such a great book. And I'm assuming we can grab it in all bookshops wherever we are right now, right?
Yes, that is correct.
Girl on the Fly was an amazing book. I loved that one very, very much. Now, to go from real life stories in Philadelphia in the 90s to a rather brilliant brand new adventure set in a magical world, Megan Hopkins has created the book Starminster, all about Astrid, who finds out one day that maybe she's about to grow some wings. I am joined right now by author Megan Hopkins. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you have brought with you a brand new book, a brand new world, in fact, Starminster. And I love this book. It is like leaping into a brand new kind of, I don't know, just a whole exciting new world. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
So it's about Astrid. She's my main character. She has lived in a rhubarb shed her entire life. Her mum tells her that unfortunately the outside world is too dangerous for her to go out. So she stays in the rhubarb shed, and she's got this particular obsession with the stars. She just wants to see the stars more than anything. And then one night, a stranger unlocks the shed, and the stranger has wings. And she takes Astrid not only out of the shed to see the stars, but also away into London, where they go up the Shard, and she reveals to her that there's a hidden city above London for people who can fly, called London Overhead. And this is where Astrid now belongs. She's going to grow wings herself at some point soon. And off she heads to the amazing school of flight, Starminster, which is St. Paul's Cathedral. And life seems really great. She starts to feel happy and free. But unfortunately, when children start going missing on the ground, Astrid realizes that maybe her mother had a point about keeping her locked up all these years.
Yeah, now this, I loved this book so much because there were so many things going on at the same time. So Astrid obviously has an unconventional childhood, and she is trying to escape, and she's given this escape, and she's kind of conflicted about, does she leave her mum behind? But then she sees this new world and there's no going back, right?
Absolutely. I mean, London Overhead to her and to me is this incredible place. You'd be an idiot really to walk away from something like that. You know, it's beautiful, it's mysterious, and there are other children there finally that she's never spent time with in her life. She gets the chance to finally develop friendships and new relationships, and it's just this huge revelation for her.
And you've also got some great friends that she makes as well, like Mason and Pent, and just lovely new people in her life because she's never really met anyone before, let alone kids.
Yeah, so it's a huge shock for her when she first gets out of the rhubarb shed. Everything is just unfamiliar. The wind, the sky, everything is terrifying. And spending time with other kids at first is terrifying as well. But she quickly meets these two lovely people. And I so enjoyed writing both of them, you know, in their own different ways.
Yeah, they're both interesting characters to write, I imagine.
Absolutely. Well, Mason makes a lot of stupid jokes, which is similar to me. So I quite enjoy writing Mason. And Pent takes life a little bit more seriously.
And she's got a lovely family as well. And I think that reminds Astrid that maybe she's missed out on that kind of lifestyle, basically.
Absolutely. And I think it's a bizarre situation for her and her mum, because her mum's desire really all along was just to protect her. But obviously she went about it in the wrong way. A huge mistake. And I think it's interesting morally that so many parents long to protect their children and end up overdoing it and ultimately harming them through.
Yeah. But luckily Astrid is escaping and she's into this new world, and it's a world that runs at the same time and the same place kind of as the world we're in right now. So it's London Overhead, so it's kind of on top of London now, basically.
Yes, absolutely. It's contemporary London. And it first sort of came to me when I went up the Shard one day with my husband, because London is such a three-dimensional city already.
Yeah.
And even in my own life, it's, you know, massively grown. It's just soared. All these skyscrapers have gone up. And it made perfect sense to me that there was another London that was over our current London, because there's a London underneath.
You know, sure.
London's everywhere.
And it's not just about the people and the places. You talk about festivals, and you talk about like the kind of like the famous families that are part of it as well. And I was like, oh yeah, that's such a good, those little things that you don't think about, but they do make a culture, and you've created a brand new culture, basically.
Oh, I so enjoyed writing the festivals. I am obsessed with the festivals. Couldn't resist them. There's one in the second book as well, because I just thought, let's have another festival.
There's a second book.
There is a second book.
Yes. Oh, this is good to know. Okay, this is amazing. Because so in this book, Astrid, of course, has to find out about this brand new world, about leaving her mum, but also about what it's going to be like to have wings, because getting to fly is pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, and it's huge. Obviously, it's something that's obviously as well incredibly dangerous. You know, St. Paul's Cathedral is the school of flight, because I spent so many years sitting in churches and cathedrals and just staring upwards, because they look like they were designed for somebody to fly through them. You sometimes think, what are all those, you know, rafters and strange little holes and nooks and crannies? What are they doing there except for somebody to sort of fly through? And I used to just sit there and imagine myself flying through the church or the cathedral, and it was just a huge part of my childhood. So whenever it came to setting a school somewhere, I was like, well, it's got to be St. Paul's Cathedral.
It makes sense. And also just flying in general is something that I have always, I mean, everybody wants to fly, right?
Oh, completely. It was like dominating my childhood. I thought about flying all the time. Still do, to be honest. You know, every time I wish I could be with someone who's far away, or I think the traffic's really intense. But there's also something about the thought of just the world dropping away from you, just being in the silence of the sky, I think is so compelling.
Yeah, the freedom. I remember jumping off, don't try this at home, anyone, but I remember jumping off the sofa and seeing if maybe I would make it. Maybe this was the time I would like get to fly. And also everybody seems to have different wings, that are different birds' kind of wings. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And that was one of the most fun things for me to research. So looking into different wings, capabilities, what they look like. It was just so much fun to look into it. And I spent a lot of time sitting in my living room just watching the birds outside, the different sort of styles of flight. If you watch sparrows, you know, they do a little sort of mad flurry and then they sort of dip down and then do another little mad flurry. And it was just brilliant fun. And of course, that really affects class in London Overhead as well, in a way that I think would happen if you're a peregrine falcon winged person. You're considered in some way superior to someone who's just got some minor wings that can't carry you very far. And that's one of the problems with London Overhead that Astrid has to face, the inequalities that are there, just like in London Underfoot.
Yeah, I was fascinated by that, the idea that those things happen and those things exist anywhere. Like in this world as well, there are different systems and different classes for another reason entirely, but they still exist, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think we can get away from those kind of things. They just tend to crop up, but it's one of the things that Astrid has to grapple with and also figure out what to do about. Ends up wanting to change things. And it was important to me to write a character that could change things, even small things. You know, children, although they often feel powerless and that they're, you know, restrained massively by the systems around them, they can change things and they can do small things to change the world, change how people are treated, do little things to change inequalities. You don't have to be this massive superhero or grow wings or anything like that to change the world, you know?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. And also, in the book, the people who do grow the wings are born in a certain month. I have to ask, is that because it was your birth month?
Unfortunately not, actually. I'm not a Libra, but then the people in the book are all Libra's star signs. And it's really fun because in the second book, I've written a festival called The Month of Birthdays, where everybody celebrates their birthdays all together over a whole month of festivities. It's so much fun to write.
You mentioned The Month of Birthdays in the first book, and I love birthdays. I think birthdays should be definitely celebrated. So I was like, I want to find out about this festival. So I'm very glad we've got it in the second book. This is good to know.
Oh, it's so much fun to write because birthdays are very compelling, aren't
they? Amazing. Why did you pick Libra's then as the kind of...
To be honest, at first it was Aries because it sounded like airy.
Yeah.
But then I learned that was an earth sign. And when I learned, looked into it a bit more, Libra is all about the concept of balance. And I thought that was very appropriate for people with wings, you know, that walk on the ground, but also are in the sky. This balance between who they are. Are they attached to the ground? Do they have the same concerns as people on the ground? Or are they more like birds who are, you know, sky destined? So it was a really interesting idea to sort of dig into a little bit more.
You really did your research on this. I love this.
Oh, it's all coming back to me now.
Yeah, I bet. Now, before we let you go, I do have a little quickfire quiz of questions just to find out a bit more about you as an author. So here we go. Do you prefer books or Kindles?
I'm really embarrassed to admit I am a Kindle person, because then I can have thousands of books with me all the time. I can read them anytime I want, which is brilliant. But I completely understand people who love the physical sensation of a book. And I have to admit, holding my book in my hands has been truly, like,
I can imagine,
one of the best moments of my life.
Oh god, I bet just having it, I can well imagine that. Heroes or villains?
I'm simple. I like a hero, you know.
You do have a good villain in the book, I have to say. You have a good...
I really enjoy writing a villain.
Yeah.
But heroes are the ones we all aspire to be like, I think.
Film adaptation or TV adaptation?
I probably watch more films. TVs are definitely better for things that are a bit longer form. I don't know. I think it depends on the book.
Yeah, that's fair. That answer for a lot of authors has changed over the last few years. It's gone from film to TV because, like you say, you get more time to kind of explore the world, I think. London Overhead or London Underfoot?
Oh, it's got to be London Overhead, right?
You know. I thought so.
Who would go to London Underfoot if you could London Overhead?
Yeah,
not that I don't love London. It's lovely to come to London.
But if you could fly, you're going to fly.
Yeah.
100%.
Beginnings or endings?
I find endings very difficult to write. I love a beginning because you've got this sort of fresh slate in front of you. But then again, that's also intimidating. I think I'm a fan of beginnings on the whole.
Hogwarts or Narnia?
That's a really difficult one. It's got to be Hogwarts, though. I mean, I know exactly where I fit into that ecosystem, you know.
I think you create a world and a school that rivals that as well. I think, honestly, I really loved leaping into it, and I think you've really nailed it. Do you write 9 to 5 or do you write when you fancy?
I try to write in the mornings usually, or when my kids are sleeping. I have small children, so I basically have to make it work anytime they're not awake. So if they go to sleep, the computer comes out and I have to, you know, sit down and type as fast as I can.
Just during nap time, just immediate writing.
Exactly.
Pigeon wings or sparrow wings?
I think I'd go sparrow because I'm not that big a fan of pigeons. I know they have a bad reputation and it's not entirely fair, but sparrows are so cute and social and everything, so I think I'd go with sparrow.
I'd agree, yeah. I'd like my uncle raises pigeons and I like them, but I'd go for sparrow. Paddington Bear or Winnie the Pooh?
Got to be Paddington. Paddington, of course, is a Londoner as well, you know, at heart, in my mind.
Of course. He is, you're right. And finally, the big one, salt and vinegar or cheese and onion?
Salt and vinegar any day.
Correct. That's the correct answer. You could say anything for anything else, but that's the one I care about the most, to be honest.
I knew it.
Megan, thank you so much for telling us all about Starminster, and I can't wait to read the second book, so definitely come back for it.
Thank you so much. Can't wait.
I'm going to put it out there. Sometimes I struggle a little bit when there's a new world or a magical thing that's been written about in books, but I was straight in it with this one. Starminster was absolutely brilliant. I loved it, and I read it all in one sitting, 5 out of 5. Right, that's pretty much it from me this week in the Bookworms podcast. Remember, if you've got some books you want to recommend, let me know at funkidslive.com or leave a comment wherever it is you're listening to this. I'll see you very soon. Bye.